and welcome to Mindset, an HCD vidcast, where we dive into the world of applied consumer neuroscience and market research with leading experts in the field. My name is Michelle Nagella, PhD in behavioral neuroscience and Director of Research and Innovation at HCD.
And I'm Catherine Ambrose, the Manager of Behavioral and Marketing Sciences with HCD. As your hosts, we are going to act as the buzzkills for the buzzwords, taking time to critically think about the limitations and pitfalls of emerging trends and topics within the field to help you identify what innovation has a lot of untapped potential or is too good to be true.
Now, HCD is a full-service research house which provides research capabilities on consumers by looking at how they perceive, evaluate, and respond to different types of stimuli, such as looking at product experiences, communications, or just general consumer and shopper experiences. We use a combination of tools that come from psychology, physiology, neuroscience, as well as the traditional methods that people typically use to see how they experience different stimuli. That stimuli can range from the early stages of exploration all the way through the final product validation tests. This is what we refer to as applied consumer neuroscience.
So stick around for more curious conversations as we chat our way through the ever-evolving space of consumer science. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Mindset. It is Catherine and Michelle here again.
Just the two of us
hanging out. We decided it would be a really good opportunity for us to just chat about some things we've noticed in industry that are things we want to talk to you about. So Michelle, do you want to share a bit about what the topic's going to be today?
Yeah. So believe it or not, once again, we are going to talk about facial coding.
Yeah.
I swear we're not obsessed. but I thought it was important to talk about sort of like the business case,
yeah.
Right? Why do people want to use something like facial coding? I think it's important, you know, for us, we have a very critical eye, as you may have heard. but we take a critical eye to all methodologies and technologies, right, and approaches and theories and everything. We're very critical and we're very always concerned with validity, right? So we end up talking a lot about certain methodologies, you know, EEG, for example, and how it's being used, and definitely facial coding and implicit. And we really go into depth. But it's always because we are also a business, we are research providers, it's important for us not to just completely focus on validity and science and everything like that. We have to think about business case too. And we have to think about where our clients are coming from.
Right. And we do have, it's an interesting place to be in industry, especially as the research and innovation team that we have, because our job is to think critically about it. However, you do have almost an empathy towards the people that you're working, yeah, with and the clients that you're working with, because deadlines are real, budgets are real, and those things play a major factor into, yeah, their capabilities.
Whenever we're designing studies, we have to take so many factors into account in order to design the study the best way, right? So when people come to us and they say, well, what would you do for this research question? The answer is almost always, it depends.
Yeah.
And that is because it truly does depend. It depends, well, how quickly do you need this by? What is your budget? You know, all sorts of issues, like what is the clientele that you're looking for? You know, is this going to be in person or is it going to be online? So whenever we're thinking about any of the methodologies, we have to take all of that into account. But there's also certain needs on the business side where a lot of times even if it's the head of the research department, they report to someone, right? Mm-hmm. They report to maybe an executive team that has certain expectations. Yeah. And so often we are approached by people who say, I need this exact methodology done because either that's what we've always done and we're no longer using that provider, so we need someone else to do it. Can you do it? Or, you know, my boss really wants us to use this methodology. So can you do something where you put gear on someone's head?
Exactly. Yeah.
The short answer is yes.
Can do anything. You can do whatever you want. You could do an fMRI study if you really wanted to, but it's
you got the money and you got the time.
Exactly. It's about your restrictions, your limitations, and then also really being able to understand why these tools may give you some funky results or may give you what you're not expecting. So that's what we're here today to talk about, is really get an understanding of why, if you choose to go forward with one of these tools, one, it's a cautionary tale, but two, it's really to inform you of the real limitations that are just inherent within the facial coding tool.
And often we get put in the awkward position of having to have you answer in writing that you've heard our cautions, right? So for example, when someone approaches us and says, we absolutely must do facial coding, the first thing we do is list off, yes, we can do it. We would actually recommend, often we say we would recommend some other way, right? But then let's say the client comes back and says, that's just simply not within our budget or time frame. We would really like you to do facial coding. And we say, okay, we can do that. Here is a list of caveats. And those caveats include things such as sample size.
Yeah.
We are going to have to very significantly over recruit because we know that we're going to have a lot of drop data. And by drop data, we literally mean there will be bad data that we cannot use.
Yeah. And it's interesting because especially with facial coding, there are so many things that you have to be cautious about for it to even be able to run through the study without any issues or hiccups. For example, you need to have really, really good lighting on the person's face. So that way that the algorithm is able to pick up on the different, the different facial expressions that they're trying to interpret. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the person has to remain extremely still.
They can't really be going like this, moving around, shaking their head. The camera is going to basically lose focus off of them. And the second that happens, the data for them is thrown out.
Basically what it is it's calibrated for you to be in a specific place in a specific time, like in the frame, and you have to remain stagnant, which you might as well mention in this that it's not very realistic when you are expressing yourself standing perfectly still as though you are a, perfect little
not the most mannequin. Comfortable position to stay in.
Exactly. So,
therefore, the longer the stimulus is, the more data you're going to lose, right? So a 30-second ad, okay, maybe, right? 15-second ad, maybe better. Mm-hmm. 2-hour long feature film, impossible.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So that's something to keep in mind.
But then there's also the issue of, are we doing it in person or are we doing it online? Because if you're doing it, whether you're doing it in person or online, you still have to get people's permission to record their faces. But it's even a higher hurdle if it's online, because now you're asking for permission from the person to use and access their webcam. And this is the first place that we lose people. The second we ask that question, do you consent to us accessing your webcam? We lose, 60% of people that say, you know what? No, thanks. Not worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the participant's right at any point to not participate in the study anymore. That is why we do informed consent. It's so that they know what they're going through. And it's the reality of the situation. People don't want other individuals to have access to their cameras or to have access to a recording of their living room or their background.
So there's issues in that because, it could take longer to recruit people, right? Because you're going to have so many dropouts. But then there's a real issue of, now who are you measuring? If you're losing a population that has concerns about security on their computer, or has concern about privacy, or has concerns about what's going to happen to their data, and you lose that population from your sample, then perhaps you end up with a biased sample.
Absolutely. And to think about that a little bit further, those are consumers too. It's people that are worried about their security are also people that are going to be purchasing whatever it is or viewing your ad on the television or on Hulu or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Those are people that are also consuming the things that you're working on. Yes. So it's, you know, it, along with being inherently biased, and it's inherently biased in multiple ways because you have the concern of that. But then of course, with facial coding, there's also the concern with the way that it is interpreted and how different cultures express themselves differently. And I know it's not the first time we've talked about this.
Or even access to a computer that has a good enough webcam that you can use. You could be excluding a population that just doesn't have a home computer with a webcam.
Or Wi-Fi, or strong enough Wi-Fi with that bandwidth. There's,
again, you're going to lose data from people who don't have a strong Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of information that we have to pass along to the client and say, this is the first reason why, because now if we're thinking about people who don't consent, people who move and, you know, move in the video or have bad lighting or bad connection, you could lose 70 to 75% of your sample right
off the bat. Yep.
Yeah. Right off the bat before you even start.
And the other thing that we're frequently posed with is this idea that facial coding is going to give people specific emotions and complicated emotions that aren't true because the facial coding, emotions, and we could say this all the time, are so complicated and so complex that it takes a lot for you to even think about the basic emotions in this methodology.
But then what are basic emotions though? So facial coding relies on only reporting out 7 basic emotions, maybe 6, depending on which provider you're using. But those basic emotions, they might have slightly different names, but they're all the same basic emotions. You know, it's anger, it's disgust, it's fear, it's joy. And there's a couple things there. How many of those things do you really think you express when watching an advertisement?
Very minimal.
But often what marketing teams actually want when they say, we need to measure emotion, we need to make sure that our ad is emotional. None of those emotions, except maybe joy, right, are outputs that clients are looking for. So when you think about your KPI, what is your emotional KPI? It's typically not disgust, right?
Or exactly. Puzzlement. There's very few situations where you want people to be expressing fear. You know, if you are advertising,
if it's like a cancer awareness, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe it's an insurance ad that wants you to be worried about something. Maybe fear is a factor there, but for the most part, people, like even in those types of ads, they want happier emotions to be connected to their brand.
Right. Nobody wants, let's say, lipstick. Nobody wants their lipstick to be portraying an emotion of fear. That is just a
confusion or disgust.
Yeah. That's just
so let's give benefit of the doubt. And that we're just trying to measure to make sure we don't have fear or disgust. Maybe. Exactly. Right. But then that still only gives you 1 positive emotion out of the 7. And that's just joy. And so that can be really problematic. But what's even worse is that when somebody is sitting there watching an advertisement, as an example, because that's probably the most common use of facial coding these days, to do ad testing. Mm-hmm. The problem is you actually don't get a lot from people. And there's a couple of reasons for that. And the first one is, what's the purpose of facial expressions? The purpose is communication, you know? So if I smile at Catherine that I see here on the screen, I'm portraying I'm not a threat to her, right? I'm friendly. I am not a threat. And that's an evolutionary communication thing that we do. That's the purpose of facial expressions. I need to express to her, if I just saw a bear in the woods and she's in danger, we're both in danger. There's fear on my face. Right. She needs to know that she needs to be worried as
well.
Take a bite of this food that I found again in the jungle, let's say. And oh no, it's disgusting. This is poisonous. Catherine, don't eat it. Right. She needs to know that. that's the point of it all. But if I am just like mindlessly watching a commercial, and perhaps even worse, being forced to watch one, right? Because when we're talking about this, you know, testing thing that we're doing, the study that we're doing, we're actually forcing people to watch ads they wouldn't be watching right now.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
So a lot of their experience is just, oh, I'm going through this. I'm just going to stare at this screen. And if you just think about what you look like when you're mindlessly watching TV, you probably don't have a lot going on your face.
Exactly. And so if you are having very minimal expressions being portrayed, which is totally a normal thing, it's not going to be able to get picked up by the facial coding units and everything like that. And therefore, again, the data is going to show exactly what you would, what it's supposed to, right? But it's going to be showing it flat. Yeah.
Yeah. And so clients get very disappointed when they see those results and they say, well, this is supposed to be an emotional ad. And it's like, well, what do you expect from someone who's just staring at a screen?
Right.
They don't have a reason to emote. Except if there's people in the ad, right? Because again, like we are, it's innate. We are designed to respond to faces. So if there is a person in the ad smiling or scowling or whatever they're doing, I'm going to mirror that. It's natural. It's what you're supposed to do.
Right. But if you're comparing, let's say an ad that has a close up on the product, I'm going to go with that lipstick again, where it's doing all these really beautiful B rolls and shots of the lipstick. And then you're going to another ad and you're comparing against it with a person applying the lipstick on their face. You're obviously going to have very different emotional reactions to those things. Like Michelle said, because they're different ads, they're different experiences, but again, you're not knowing if it's better or worse. You're just knowing that the person is having that innate human response that you would anticipate because they're seeing another person and they're, you know, understanding what that person's communicating to them.
So then what's the issue there? Like, we give these caveats to clients that say, please do facial coding. We need to do facial coding. We say, fine, here's the list of problems. Here's the things you can expect. We want to make sure that the client knows what to expect because they're going in wanting something. And when they get the results, they're often disappointed. And it's not just from us. It's from other people as well. So we just talked to a client recently, for example, who was well aware that the results were going to be flat, right? But they wanted to do it anyway, because again, they were getting that from higher ups. They were getting it from previous research. It had to be facial coding. So we make sure to put it in writing. Here's what you can expect. These are some concerns that we have going into it. But we will do our best, right? And we have them, we say, you must respond to that. You've seen this. And so that's something, unfortunately, that we have to do. But even then, we still get concerns afterwards. And we say, you know, yes, we told you this was going to happen. I just want to give an example of, you know, a client we recently worked with, not going to say who it is or exactly anything that we were studying, but, so looking at the ads, there wasn't a lot of activity. And so that was the first disappointment. But secondly, the thing he came back asking us about was a specific emotion that simply wasn't in the list of basic emotions that facial coding can ask for. So asking for calm, for example, is not something you can get from facial coding.
Yeah. Joy is not going to tell you about being calm. Neither is disgust. Neither is fear or, you know, anger.
But even the neutral face that is also being measured, that is simply also not going to be, you know. And then, so then the other thing was, when you get those results back, they said that they got a lot more interpretation from other providers. So again, I'm not going to mention their names out there, but what they tended to do was just show the graphs for each individual emotion. What we did was show all the emotions so that you could see everything, but they actually start out at different levels. And so that's another really interesting thing about reading the graphs. Any graph, really, you can change the way a graph is interpreted simply by the way you display it.
Oh, absolutely.
If you zoom in on a certain point, it actually can look like huge effects, even though it's minuscule when you look at the overtime.
Everyone, that's a warning to always look at the scale. Make sure you
always look at the scale. Or, you know, then they would
make sure
say,
it has a scale.
Well, why is this one emotion, say it's puzzlement, right? Why is that one up here and joy is down here on the graph? And it's like, well, they just have different baselines. because you start from a neutral face and see where it goes from there. But this is problematic because, again, we're looking at people like probably staring at a screen where their, you know, forehead might furrow a little bit, which is going to come off automatically as puzzlement, even if the person isn't confused.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And it's frustrating because, again, we find these situations happening and we hear about it from, you know, other clients that have gone through the process of it. And the thing is that you get what you pay for in terms of the quality of the tool that you're using. Yeah. And so for a lot of situations, you can take that same research question and maybe try and design a different style of research that is going to help you get those exact attributes that you're looking for, right, or exact emotional states. It might not be as flashy as facial coding, but it'll actually give you some insights that you can then take to your higher ups and say, yeah, look, this is the clear, better ad. And this gives you the direction that you want to go in.
Yeah, you really do have to think about those outputs because, okay, in this case of wanting to look for something like calm, right, or pride, or one of, yeah, these other types of emotions that cannot be measured by facial coding. Well, what can it be measured by? You know, so another popular, you know, implicit or, you know, neuro tool is EEG. But guess, right, what? EEG can't measure that either. You, right, can't get pride from EEG.
Think about how complex the brain is. If you're trying to use an EEG, you have to be really cognizant of the fact that there are so many things happening in your brain at the same time, yeah, that are contradictory.
You're breathing, your eye blinking, your heart is beating, all because of your brain. So EEG is not reading minds. It's actually just measuring electrical activity. So the fact that you are alive is activity.
Yeah.
So that's a lot going on, right? So then where is pride in the brain? Nobody knows. Nobody knows what pride looks like in electrical activity. You know, another way we describe EEG is that you're trying to listen to a conversation five floors down from you. Right. You may hear there's noise, you know, through your floor, but you can't hear what your neighbors are talking about. So,
exactly,
you know, we can tell certain things like, is it more positive or is it more negative? Just like if you were listening to your neighbors, you could say, you know what, they sound kind of angry, right? But you have no idea what they're talking about. So yeah, there isn't a perfect tool for something like that, but you do need to take a step back and think, okay, if I'm looking for pride, then what's the best way? And it's probably a cognitive measure, or maybe it's using implicit association, right?
Right.
Implicit reaction time for keywords.
And I want to really harp on what you just brought up with EEG and bring it back to facial coding. And the truth of the matter is that we are not able to read emotions through these tools. And emotions are complex, and it's not something that you're going to be able to look at through facial coding or look at through EEG.
Absolutely. And so when we're talking to the client once again, and they're wondering, but I can't differentiate here. It's not giving me the output I'm looking for on pride. Well, that's why we warn you ahead of time what the outputs are going to be. And, you know, you signed off on this. So then, you know, diagnosing, you know, an ad as well can be really problematic because if you're not getting really any movement, then how can you diagnose what's going on? What was interesting about the client I was just speaking about is that, you know, they wanted to compare ads, but the ads were incredibly different. So having one ad that is showing only, you know, non-animated things, products or nature or anything of that sort, and then comparing it to an ad that is full of people, or maybe, you know, focusing on particular characters that are having an emotional experience, you're going to get a lot of activity from the people.
Yeah,
exactly. We know that it's biased then at that point. So then all the results we can say is that, well, the ad with the people is performing better. And that's not necessarily true. Right? It's just that people do more facial expressions when there's people on the screen.
So what do you do when you have a client that now finds themselves in a position that they've done the facial coding research and they're not happy with the results? Where do they go from there?
Yeah. You know, we do our best to help them through their story. So we try to describe what's going on as best we can with a combination, hopefully, of the survey that they did, with the facial coding results and try to speak to each ad on its own. So what happened in this ad? And then also take some background knowledge that we have on ad testing. Luckily, we have, you know, I don't know, like 30 years of experience doing ad testing. And so we're very familiar with what's working, what's not. And we can kind of take these subtle things that we're seeing from the facial coding and make some inferences based on what we've seen, right? So we try as best we can to help the client. Take a step back with them to talk about what their research questions were. Well, what does it require to have a success here? You know, action criteria, you know, so in order to say that we should go with ad number three, what do we need it to be? And we can go over that with them and decide maybe which one is doing that best from what we know. But it can be really limiting. And that's why the first step is really just trying to meter those expectations going in. And also do our best to make sure we're including some survey questions as well, because it can be really hard to interpret those results without any context, right?
Absolutely. And I think managing expectations is such a key thing that we do, but a part of our job that is not necessarily in the job description, but is a big part of our job is educating the general public, but also our clients on these limitations and really talking them through exactly why these results are happening and why these tools are what they're able to do and what they're good for and what they're not the best for.
Yeah. So certainly we're trying. Help us help you, right? That's what we're always thinking in this is we're not ever trying to scam anyone, you know, so we're always honest and upfront about the limitations ahead of time so that the client knows going in. And then coming out of it, again, we always want the client to have the best that we can offer, which is why we try to bring in as much of our back knowledge as we can. But in general, we want people to understand, as Catherine was saying, going into this, that it can be really problematic. So we all need to just be aware.
100%. So we are going to move over to a fun segment that we've been implementing, which is the React Attack game. I am going to be asking Michelle 10 words that she has not seen, doesn't know about.
Nope.
And basically, I'm just going to have her share the first thing that comes to her mind. So are you ready, Michelle?
Let's do it.
Awesome. All right. So word number one, trust.
Depends.
Actor.
Lies.
Smile.
Happy.
Cheap.
Quick.
AI.
Complicated.
Expressions.
Human.
Algorithms.
Not human.
Mirrors.
Reflection.
Anger.
Sadness.
And the final word, robot.
I laugh because the first thing that actually came to mind is the capture thing, you know, the image saying, I'm not a robot. so I guess my response is, I'm not a robot.
I love it. I love it. Just wanted to throw a fun one in there, a nice random one to finish things off.
Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. I think, you know, again, it's just about our concern, as always, of making sure that you're using the right tool for the right question. And our question is constantly whether or not facial coding really is that tool. Right. And we get it. We totally get it. Sometimes you have to do it, and cheap and easy is sometimes cheap and fast is what people are looking for. But, you know, that doesn't mean you're getting good quality. As Catherine said, sometimes you get what you pay for.
Exactly. Exactly. So we really hope that this was informative, that this was helpful. If you have any questions for us, of course, we're happy to chat with you at any time. But until next time, we hope that everybody takes care and stays safe.
Thank you so much.
HCD Mindset is produced by Helen Ross. For more information or updates, follow HCD Research on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at HCD Research Inc. and at HCD Neuroscience. Subscribe to our YouTube channel and be sure to rate, review, and follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you and stay tuned for more curious conversations.